The outbreak began last December. About 60% of Liberia's cases and deaths have occurred within the last 3 weeks. Science magazine at the end of August had an article on Ebola, and it begins, Alessandro Vespiani hopes that his latest work will turn out to be wrong. He predicted more than 10,000 cases by September 24 and hundreds of thousands in the months after that. The numbers, he says, are really scary. The model assumes that control efforts are not stepped up, and if they are, perhaps the numbers would go down. We all hope to see this not happening, that the control efforts will not be working. We're going to be talking about this issue this hour of the program. If the disease keeps spreading as it has, most of the people who model all of this say that their numbers could turn out to be conservative. If the epidemic in Liberia were to continue the way it has just now until the 1st of December, the cumulative number of cases could reach 100,000 people. And of course, there are concerns that this could spread to other countries outside of Africa and many more countries within Africa. Our guest this hour has been doing some much noted and important modeling work. Alessandro Vespiani is Sternberg Distinguished University Professor in the Department of Physics, College of Computer and Information Sciences, Health Sciences at Northeastern University. His research focuses on the interdisciplinary application of statistical and numerical simulation models in the analysis of epidemic and spreading phenomena and the study of biological, social, and technological networks. We'll be welcoming phone calls for the professor, and here's how you can reach us. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Alessandro Vespiani, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you very much, and thank you very much to all the listeners.
Yeah, thank you for all the work that you've done. Let's start with Liberia, where the president of the country is saying that they are just devastated, that they're witnessing their country literally becoming undone. This is the latest outbreak, and the numbers are horrendous, aren't they?
Yeah, the numbers, unfortunately, are growing. What we are all waiting is to see a deceleration of the cases that are reported weekly by the WHO, but unfortunately for the moment we still see the data aligned with some kind of, I won't say worst case projection, but you know, with the kind of gloomy projection. You know, our hope is that actually, there is a lot of effort undergoing in the region with agencies and NGOs, etc. And there will, how to say, it's natural to expect a delay before we see the effect of those, efforts. Mm-hmm. So I hope in the next few weeks to see, improvements in the situation. At the moment, obviously, it's very worrying. Yeah.
Now, tell me how you use very sophisticated computer models to track where this outbreak is going, and of course it would be helpful in curbing the outbreak, but how do you track this?
Well, basically, you know, for the listeners to have a kind of a simple comparison, we try to do what is done with the weather forecast. When you try to project the path of a hurricane, you have all those spaghetti models that will tell you where the hurricane will go. Actually, instead of using models for the atmosphere and, you know, and the weather, we use models of human population, the transmission of the disease. We use the mobility of people because actually we are the carrier of a disease. Obviously, in our interaction, we transmit the disease to other individuals. So we map, for instance, the entire airline network. We look at the people, how they commute and drive to bring their kids to school or to go to the workplace. And we do that globally, recreate a kind of synthetic world in the computer. And then we get the data from the field concerning a specific disease, and each disease is a specific different model. There is no model that fits all diseases, obviously. And with the data that we get from the ground, we initialize the model, and then we try to project into the future, 2-3 weeks, 4 weeks, and see how the disease will spread, the number of cases. what we call the, how to say, where, when, and how. So where it will be the disease, you know, when it will get in a certain region, and how much it will impact that region.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, at the moment, we are focusing on West Africa, but we in our work, we are looking also at the probability that the disease will sooner or later appear in the United States, Europe, other countries through people traveling from that area.
Do you anticipate that happening, UK, America? Cases will appear here?
Well, you know, UK, America, and a couple of other European countries are among the top 15 countries at risk. The probability is not very, very large, and at least till the end of September, October. So, you know, we are talking about, you know, 10 to 20% probability to see cases coming in, and this is not a, you know, there is. These are not overwhelming probabilities. But, you know, obviously the more cases will be generated in that region and the more likely we will sooner or later see those importation from the region.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there is a lot of worries about the fact that the disease actually could be exported in other places in Africa, as it has already happened in Nigeria and Senegal. And obviously those countries are also less, less prepared to deal with such emergencies. So there is much more worries that they will not be able to contain eventual outbreaks. So, you know, that's a situation that obviously calls all of us to fight a battle now in the affected countries, because this is where we need to extinguish the fire. You know, that's not just their problem. It's a problem for everybody on the long run if
they're
not able to do that.
And do you imagine, I have read that the number of cases in West Africa, just because of not very sophisticated reporting systems, may be much higher than what we're looking at?
Yeah, there could be an underreporting of about 50%.
Oh, my goodness.
So basically we could even deal with twice as much cases as we seen in the official reports. I don't think it's so acute, but probably this is more concerning specific regions. But obviously the numbers generally are larger than what is the official reporting system telling you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate, but, you know, and the numbers you were mentioning before, but, you know, we are more than 4,000 cases there now, and, you know, its last reports are still showing an increased number of cases and deaths. So the situation is really tough on the ground.
What is it that's unusual about the cases now? Ebola has been in Africa before, hasn't it?
Yeah, it is a disease that wasn't always considered a kind of, you know, endemic, because it's a zoonotic disease you get by eating animals that are infected with Ebola. But outbreaks generally were limited to rural areas and not reaching large populated cities. And, you know, they were generally contained effectively. This is not clear. This is where, you know, there is a big question mark. Why this outbreak is so different? One of the possible causes of that is that, you know, mobility of people has changed a lot in Africa. And before, probably regions where Ebola could create an outbreak were isolated regions with not too many people going to large cities. And this is now, even in Africa, there is much more connection, more traveling of people, and the disease has spread much more. There may be variation in the transmissibility of the virus. There can be other options, but obviously this is something unprecedented.
Mm-hmm. And if we had seen this early on, would have we been able to contain it better if we had quarantined people or done heavy education campaigns? I guess I'm trying to understand why it could have spread so fast to so many people.
Because, you know, the health care system there is something that has nothing to, you know, it's,
yes.
We cannot, you know, think of an healthcare of that kind. In the U.S., we have an healthcare that would immediately react to that, would people, would put put people in quarantine or actually in isolation. We would have all the possible, you know, resources to deal with this disease. In those countries, this is not the case. We are talking of countries that have few hundred, you know, hospital beds for the entire population. So, you know, these are really places where the healthcare system get immediately strained to a level and to such an extent that that is unimaginable for us.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, the fact the more cases there are and the more the system is somehow disrupted. So this is why we need really to act now and to bring a coordinated effort there.
And what do we need to do? What should that coordinated effort be?
That means resources. That means people. That means hospitals, beds. That means, you know, all the things that for us are we give for granted, from latex glove to whatever equipment is needed in the hospitals. You know, that's basic things is what makes the difference. And then, you know, those countries have a hard time in really gathering the resources. We need, you know, we need to keep in mind that those are countries with a lot of problems, with other diseases, where the general health of the population is different, and you know, they are coming from you know, civil wars. You know, there are all the possible problems in that region, and you know, this is a kind of lessons for us. It's the fact that we need to put up to speed the healthcare systems of those countries, because actually emerging disease in those regions then might get into the United States, in Europe. And so, you know, this is a global problem. Diseases have no border at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are one hop away from any place in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so what we have to remember if we will be able to tame this outbreak.
And yet, when you talk about help, I was reading today that the U.S. is hamstrung by a lack of military medical personnel who have any kind of expertise in dealing with Ebola.
Well, you know, it's not easy to, well, deploying people on the ground and having Ebola, you know, specific skills is not something that, you know, you are used to deal with it every day. So it's obviously we have people that are able in our hospitals to do that, you know, but it's not easy. On one side, it's easy to say, well, let's send their people and you know, float with equipment. It's not just that, you know, you have to do with a strategy, and there is a way to do. So it's I think the discussion now is evolving in a positive way. All the major agencies and the United States through the CDC, and now also, you know, also the military apparatus is bringing into the discourse. You know, everything is moving in a positive direction.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, we have to speed up. You know, the next few weeks is a crucial time, and the CDC, you know, director was saying that, you know, the window of opportunity is closing a few days ago, and that's because we really need to act now.
Mm-hmm. It's my understanding that the outbreak models look at four groups of people: susceptible people, those who have been infected but are not contagious, those who are sick and can transmit the virus, and then those who have recovered. Who is susceptible to Ebola?
Well, potentially everybody. That's the point. You know, we there is a discussion about immunity to Ebola in some regions of Africa where the population has been already exposed to the virus, probably. But obviously, if you think about, you know, United States or other places, it's you know, we have never been in a sense exposed to that virus, and you know, basically the population is susceptible.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get the disease, you become basically infected, but not yet infectious and not yet symptomatic. You don't start right away to show the symptoms of the disease. And generally, there is an incubation time that goes from 2 to 20 days. On average, it's about 1 week, 10 days. And this is actually is the period in which you can travel and you can going on with your usual and regular activities, and this is what is spread the disease to a certain extent. This is, for instance, would be the people that one would expect to see arriving in the United States or other countries, because those are the people that are not yet sick in the sense of the symptomatic way of the sickness, and then might get on a plane and travel to a certain destination. Mm-hmm. Then you get infectious and symptomatic, and this is the good part of this disease in the sense, in the terms of public health and control, because you are really very sick. As soon as you start to develop symptoms, you are very sick, and generally the mobility of those individuals is very limited, and the transmissibility is just through bodily fluids. So, you know, it's not an airborne disease, so the transmissibility is not that one of influenza. So it's much more difficult to get the disease from somebody who is sick if you use the precautions that are, you know, generally used with somebody who is sick and vomiting, et cetera, et cetera. Then there is the hospitalization of the individual that occurs at a certain point, and then there is also the fact that there is a problem with the body. If the patient dies, then, you know, the body is still infectious, and all the funeral rites are a problem to handle. So mm-hmm. it's not something that there is a kind of transmissibility also in that setting in West Africa.
Have we seen any parts of West Africa where there was an explosion in cases and it has been successfully contained?
Well, there have been several outbreaks, large outbreaks in the past, you know, with hundreds of cases, and the disease has always been contained. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the hope now is to step up the containment and control campaign on the ground. And hopefully we will be able to do the same also in this case. Obviously, you know, and this is fair to say, nobody should expect tomorrow to see, well, there is no cases reported today. It will take time to extinguish the outbreak. And so what we hope to see in the next few weeks is to see a deceleration of the number of reported cases. So to see a kind of downwind in trend in the numbers that comes from the region. That's our hope.
And if we don't do that, you're saying that we're at a tipping point. We only have a certain amount of time to make sure that happens, right? Or else?
Well, you know, if things really spins out of control, it's very difficult to say what would happen to the region, because at that point, you know, you imagine that the healthcare system is basically disrupted, and you know, the disease could really start spilling, going to other places in Africa. So I really, it's very difficult to have at that point a picture now of what could happen, you know. But it obviously would be a major, major catastrophe, you know, something really, really.
Yes.
You know, we are talking about a disease that we need to stress again as a case fatality ratio of more than 50%. Mm. So we are talking about, you know, a disease that potentially can wipe out half of the population or more.
Mm-hmm. We welcome phone calls. We'll start taking them in just one moment. We're talking about Ebola this hour, and our guest analyzes the spread of infectious diseases, and he has been analyzing the spread of Ebola. He is Alessandro Vespiani. He's Sternberg Distinguished University Professor, Department of Physics, College of Computer and Information Sciences, at Northeastern University. He is originally from Italy and studied in Italy, and his models have been cited by many in looking at where this disease has spread and what the possibilities are of it going beyond West Africa. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Lines are open for you right now. You can send an email, too, if you would like to do that, talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The number for you to join the conversation as we talk about Ebola and the spread of Ebola 800-486-8655 is our number. Professor Alessandro Vespiani is our guest, and we start our calls with Dave in Minocqua. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, hi, Kathy. Thank you for taking my call,
sure.
and thank your guest, too. I would just like to ask your guest, my wife and I just watched a PBS documentary last night or the night before, and part of it concerned the ongoing war in Nigeria. And I wanted to know if your guest has a very current update on has Ebola begun to spread into Nigeria at all, because it would be extremely hard to treat it there with the kind of warfare they've had going on there in the last month. And so I just wanted to know that, what his prognosis was for the disease spreading southward in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, Nigeria has been affected by Ebola by importing one traveler in the capital city, and initially the outbreak was considered contained, so they were able to contact trace all the people in that were in contact with that person and then isolate them. Unfortunately, a few days ago, some other news came that some of the person that got in contact with the index case was basically hiding in a hotel, and
oh.
That was Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Okay, and the doctor that was basically taking care of him and was at the same time working with other patients got infected, and there are more cases, so there is now contact tracing on that person. It's not clear if the outbreak is contained. However, in Nigeria, we are still talking about a small number of cases and a large effort on the ground, really, to contain just the very early stage of this outbreak.
Thank you very much for your call. Pam in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi.
Yes, Pam.
I want to know when this was first classified and identified as a virus, and when, because we've been having reports for decades. I mean, originally there were reports coming out of Plum Island in New York, and now there are reports that it's not entirely viral. So I just wanted to know where this was first isolated, identified, and where those reports are.
Okay, I don't remember exactly, but this is Ebola is a virus that is well known since many years, if I'm not wrong, in the 70s and so on and so forth. So there has always been, as I was saying, is a disease that is endemic in the African region, and there are different strains of the virus. So it's not, you know, Ebola is not just one disease in a sense. There are different strains, and we need to differentiate. For instance, at the moment there is another Ebola outbreak in Congo, and this outbreak has nothing to do with the outbreak that is ongoing in West Africa. So we always have to distinguish. So it's always been a disease that we have been dealing with in those regions in recent decades. But, you know, obviously the size and at this point the growth rate of the outbreak in West Africa is absolutely unprecedented. That's the important point.
Mm-hmm. Doctors Without Borders was talking about the situation in Liberia, and they say that in one county, which includes Monrovia, there's a need for 1,000 beds to treat Ebola patients, but that they can only provide about 400 of those beds. It would appear to me, Doctor, that we have a whole lot to do on the ground to contain this if you can't find 600 beds in an area where it is spreading so rapidly.
Yeah, that's the challenge. And we are not just talking about beds this is not, again, it's not the flu or that kind of
yes.
disease. You need to have, you know, isolation tents. Hopefully you need to keep the hydration of the cases. You have to provide all the healthcare that we would be used in a top-notch hospital in the U.S. And obviously in those regions this is not available. And setting up, you know, 1,000 beds from nothing is not, you know, that's the challenge. And this is what all the organizations are struggling with at the moment. And mm-hmm. this is why Liberia is really shouting this, you know, please help. At this point, you know, any help is welcome. And obviously, you know, the entire international community should really take this call. You know, it's not just U.S. There is also Europe. There is China. There is all countries. Because all of us, you know, ultimately will be affected by this if we don't control it.
So are other countries stepping up or not?
We hear of other countries stepping up, but I think at this point we need more energy from everybody. Let's say that way, this way.
Right. And why don't we get that? Is it because I don't understand why we don't get that? How can we see so many people suffering and dying and not step in as a world community and say, let's do everything we can to help?
Yeah, you know, and then you enter in a political discussion where a modeler like me has to be very humble and say, you know, there are many, many other constraints. And, you know, when you start talking about, you know, mobilizing internationally a large effort, there are many, many political constraints that you have to consider who is doing that, who is leading the effort, et cetera, et cetera. I think also there is a perception of, okay, we are talking about 2,000 deaths, and obviously, you know, there are many, many other health issues in that region as well, in other regions of the world. We are fighting other outbreaks and so on and so forth. But this is something that we need to understand the potential of what's happening there. So this is a disease that is highly pathogenic, is lethal, and, you know, at the moment is in a kind of exponential growth. And that is what really has to convince people that we need to act now. You know, an exponential growth, it grows not linearly. So, you know, every 2 weeks we have the doubling of cases. We need to imagine what this could escalate, how this could escalate in the next few weeks. And also think that, you know, the more cases will be in that region and the more we will start seeing cases in our countries, you know, unless really we imagine, you know, to isolate entirely that region, that would be another you know, big mistake. You know, this is obviously would leave those people without any help, and as well, on the long run, is not going to really have a benefit, you know, because an epidemic of such proportion is going to knock at the doors of other countries.
Yeah. We're talking about Ebola this hour of the program, and our guest has been doing modeling of the spread of this disease. Alessandro Yaspiani is with us. He is a distinguished university professor in the Department of Physics, College of Computer and Information Sciences as well, and Health Sciences at Northeastern University. And his research is on the interdisciplinary application of statistical and numerical simulation methods in the analysis of epidemic and spreading phenomena. So he is quite the expert on the spread of this disease, and issues a warning this hour that it simply must be contained, and we will talk a little bit more as we go on about how it is contained, what it is that people in West Africa need to do personally, what they need to do, and more about how the world community needs to respond. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Mary Jane in Platteville is next. Hi, Mary Jane.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm curious as to if there is information out there that if a government steps in and gives the assistance that is needed, say you say that these beds are needed. Now, I see here in the United States, we've conquered many diseases and spreadable ones, and I think that is why they had actually brought those two healthcare workers back to the United States to give them the treatment that was needed, was to ease the minds of Americans, letting them know if this occurs, in our country. If we do have a threat and it comes, we are prepared. We know what needs to be done. Is the government over there any way involved? I mean, I'm not hearing things about their government requesting assistance and requesting help. And, you know, I understand, you know, it takes a lot of money and stuff, but we would need the backing of the government in order to even get into some of these places. Is there a noticeable difference if the government is involved in the spread of this disease?
Well, you know, the government means the healthcare system. So those countries are obviously now are activated at the maximum level with their governments and all the healthcare system. The international community also is working at the governmental level. So the WHO obviously is the World Health Organization is working on the outbreak, but as well United States through the CDC, through the Center of Disease Control, are providing support, and this is the support that has been asked by those countries. In the United States, you know, we don't have to be worried about, you know, the Ebola outbreak at the moment. Even if we will have importation of cases from the region, one or two, whatever it happens, because of people traveling from West Africa and coming to the U.S., you know, our health system is totally prepared to isolate those people and take care of them without the disease spreading. We could have, you know, events in the household of the person or things like that. But, you know, all indications points out that there will be no large outbreak in the United States. But, you know, again, it's something that, as the listener was saying, you know, the fact that we have we were successful in the United States to eradicate many diseases or actually not, you know, winning the battle with certain diseases is because we have a very good healthcare system. And, you know, the best way to avoid the problem with emerging diseases worldwide is to empower countries in Africa and other regions of the world to develop the same level of healthcare. You know, this is where we really win the battle against diseases.
You know, what is it that people in these affected countries need to do? What kinds of steps simply have to be mandatory, part of daily life?
For the Ebola outbreak, of course, you know, in the world, well, at the moment in the region, really, we need, you know, the need is for to step up, you know, what is the healthcare system in the sense of providing hospital beds, provide equipment, provide doctors, nurses, you know, among the deaths that are that are reported from the region, many are people working are healthcare workers.
Yes,
so you know you have a system that is affected by the disease itself, you know, and then of course is incapacitated to fight. So you know, bringing their people with the skills to combat that disease and to provide healthcare, it's extremely important. And obviously, you know, for internationally, in our case, obviously, is the fact to monitor people that might have an history of traveling to the region, and if there are certain symptoms and they are all well, how to say, there are advisory and there is directions from the CDC, for instance, in the United States, what you have to do with cases that might be potentially cases of Ebola, and there are protocols that in the United States are already, you know, working and up to speed.
So, a doctor I was reading said that people in West Africa have to alter behaviors, and I wanted your comment on that. Decrease the transmission in funerals by 40%, a model, but in the field that's really hard. Can you tell me how this is transmitted by funerals and what would need to change in that regard?
Well, you know, there are various things that, you know, our social behavior is interconnected with how the disease spread, you know, and obviously in that region there is some level of difference with respect to the hospital care. So not all people that are sick goes to the hospital, or in some cases they try to escape from the hospital, they hide from you know the healthcare system. They don't trust the system, and then that obviously does help the disease spreading, because you know you stay home and then you contact other people and then you spread the disease to other people. The same is for funeral. You know, obviously, you know, unfortunately, this is very sad, but the body of somebody who has died because of Ebola is still, you know, a very highly contagious thing, and should be handled in a totally different way than having the regular funeral rites, kissing the body or things like that, you know.
Right.
And this is obviously something that has to change in the region. We need to let understand people that they have to change their behavior, and that's crucial. This is why, you know, in the United States, it would be a totally different issue. So obviously, you know, anybody who is sick in the United States would look for the best healthcare, would go to the hospital, you know, and this is not what happening in the region in many cases, and that's why we say that we need to change that the perception of people and the behavior of people with respect to the disease.
Yeah.
And here is again where I say that, you know, modelers have to be very, very humble. You know, I'm doing numerical computation, and for me, drawing scenarios of those changes on the ground is in a certain way easy. When you are really fighting on the ground, it's totally different. The people who are now there fighting the battle against the disease, the volunteer, the people sent there from the various agencies, they are really heroes at the moment. You know, they are really risking their lives for this battle.
Yeah. More phone calls. We welcome your phone calls. We're talking about Ebola this hour of the program, and if you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Alessandro Vespiani is our guest. He is a distinguished professor of physics at Northeastern University, and he has developed computational models to predict the spread of infectious diseases. And he has been currently doing a great deal of work, which has been noticed all over the world, on Ebola. He holds appointments in the College of Science, the College of Health Sciences, and the College of Computer and Information Science. Here's how you reach our conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're talking about what's been going on all over West Africa. Very much in the news this week is Liberia, with the defense minister of that country telling the UN Security Council Liberia is facing a serious threat to its national existence because of Ebola. It's caused a disruption of the normal functioning of the state. More phone calls momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to more phone calls for Alessandro Vespiani, and we go to Mary in Eau Claire next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I was wondering about, getting protective gear to healthcare professionals. I was reading that on the internet that some Liberian nurses had gone on strike because they had no protective gear, and funerals is one thing, but if healthcare workers don't have basic healthcare protections, how big a problem is this?
Well, that's a big problem because those countries lack the basic resources and hospital materials. So this is what is part of the effort that is ongoing at the moment. And, you know, it's to bring their materials and equipment and resources to those countries. And as I told you, things that for us are, you know, something that doesn't cost almost nothing, even bleach, you know, whatever. It's something that we can't imagine is not there, you know, and badly needed at the moment. These are the I would say is the things that were. We will see effect in the near future, obviously. But at this point, we also need to bring their personnel and nurses and doctors, because, as I was saying, many of them have died already because of the disease.
Yeah, you know, you simply have to have that gear, or you're taking a huge risk, aren't you?
Well, you're taking really a huge risk, and sooner or later, you are all you run risk to get infected. Also, consider that you are not operating in a hospital in a regular situation. So, the hospital is under stress, overwhelmed with patients, and you are working on shifts which are probably 24/7, and so the more you are tired, and the more you run the risk to make some mistakes. So that's what happens when the system is under strain and all the people are under high stress. So that's where we really need to provide some help to those countries.
Thank you, Mary, for your call. Mike in St. Paul. Hi.
Hi. How are you today?
All right, Mike. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Say, the question I have is related to the transmissibility of Ebola, and I understand that currently it is not an airborne disease. But given the length of time that this outbreak has lasted and the extent of the human population that's been infected, I'm curious if this disease, or what the potential that this disease could mutate and become an airborne virus, especially given that we're coming into flu season, and I don't know how viruses interact with one another. I can go ahead and take my answer off the air. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, that's a question that some people is wondering. You know, what is the risk that the disease will change because of mutation and spread differently? It's very unlikely, and I would rule out the fact that the disease will acquire airborne transmission. Although in the biological world, everything is potentially possible, but that's very, very, very unlikely. What could happen is that the disease changes its transmissibility in the sense that it's more transmissible, that one could become infectious before the full onset of symptoms. You know, there are mutations in the virus that have been already observed, so that, of course, there is a change. Viruses they change continuously. At the moment, there are no indication from the field that there is a variation with respect to what we know about Ebola. And that somehow is so far a good news.
Steve in Madison. Hi. Steve? Our number is 800-486-8655, and we're talking about the spread of Ebola this hour of the program. You mentioned these fruit bats, these African fruit bats. Is it definitively known that that's the source of the Ebola outbreak? Do you know?
No. Other kind of animals as well as fruit bats have Ebola in that region, and some of those animals are used as food. And generally, the outbreak starts from those animals. There may be different, however, it's not clear where really these outbreaks started in a sense from. What kind of animal? Now, what we know is that it's human-to-human transmission that is pushing the outbreak. So, actually, it's really the transmission among humans in the households, the hospitals, the funeral, whatever. So, at this point, we will never be able to say if it was coming from a specific animal species or not, but. It's unfortunately easy in several species in Africa.
Is it important for us to know that for future possible outbreaks?
Yeah, that's very important for the future outbreaks. This is also to understand what are the regions in Africa that have the highest risk to have other, outbreaks in the future. To educate people to be very careful in feeding on certain wild animals, etc. So this is crucial for the future and to understand who are the reservoirs of Ebola. For the current outbreak at this point is however, we just really need to control and contain the current epidemic.
Dean in Madison, hi.
Yes, hi. I was just curious if you could just comment on what is the mechanism of transmission from animals to humans? How does the virus get into, the original human host? And then
yeah,
from there, I'm just wondering how it transmits from animals to humans.
Yeah, generally is feeding on those animals, so it's the same level, is the same transmission that occurs in humans. So through the bodily fluids and whether it's the bodily fluids of the animal and feeding on the animal, hunting the animal, or things like that, you can get sick with Ebola. When you are sick, since it's a virus that has human to human transmission, you start transmitting to member of the household, the people you are in contact, and then healthcare workers and so on and so forth.
Thank you, Dean. Carl in Madison. Hi.
Howdy. I was wondering, how long, let's say a surface gets contaminated, how long does the virus stay viable?
I didn't get the question exactly. So what is... if we contain this outbreak, means that we are able somehow to extinguish the outbreak. Then... it means that there will be no infectious individuals in the population anymore at the end of the outbreak. For instance, the WHO has now a roadmap to win this fight in about 6 to 9 months. And at the end of the outbreak, you know, the virus is not there in the human population anymore. At that point, what we would need to be worried is what we were talking about, the reinjection in the human population from animals. And then future outbreaks. And these are two different and separate issues.
And he was asking, I think, about how long a virus stays viable if it's on a surface somewhere.
Oh, I think it's, you know, it could stay for several hours or you know, it's a matter, again, of the fluids that contains the virus. So, you know, obviously, the things that everybody says is you know, you need to be with somebody who is really sick, is vomiting, is bleeding, and things like that, and touch those liquids. So it's something that is readily, should be readily identifiable to people, you know, where you don't have to, if you see somebody who is sick that way and in that region, you should be stay away. That's why it is always said that, you know, in a sense, Ebola is easier to contain if you know those things than airborne transmitted disease. You know,
yeah.
You really see the.
But how hard it is to stay away from somebody you love and you want to care for, right?
Yeah, that's the point. You know, I think every one of us has to put ourselves in the shoes.
Yes.
And of those people who perhaps, you know, the kids might
right.
think, or the wife, and what do you do? And what do you want is to provide them care. And obviously, you know, what we would do here is to bring them to the hospital and put in the hand of professionals. And in that region, this is not always possible. Actually, at the moment, is you know, the most of the hospital are overwhelmed, and you can imagine what kind of desperate situation many of those people have to face.
Yeah. Do you have a website, doctor, that we could look at to track your models?
Actually, we have our laboratory website that is now.
What was that?
I never remember my own website. You know that
right?
But it's www.mobs-lab.org.
Okay, thank you very much for being with us and for all of the information.
Thank you very much for asking me.
Our guest, Alessandro Vespiani, and he is a distinguished professor of physics at Northeastern University. He's developed these computational models to predict the spread of infectious disease. He holds appointments there in the College of Science, the College of Health Sciences, and the College of Computer and Information Science. Conversation on the spread of Ebola, which is pretty alarming, isn't it? Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to KP as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee.